The content of this podcast is provided for general informational purposes only and is not intended as, nor should it be considered a substitute for, professional medical advice.
Sweaty and pissed, menopause makes me sweaty and pissed.
Welcome, everybody.
We're here.
Yeah, we're here. We're back. Oh, my gosh.
I was in brain fog. I was staring out into space.
Yes, you were. There was nothing to look at in here either.
I know. I was trying to drink tea in front of you because you're my provider.
Oh, you're so good.
Yeah, I'm not either. I drank a Diet Coke before that.
Well, welcome to Sweaty and Pissed, Menopause and More.
Yes, I'm Leanne Morgan.
And I'm Karen Nickel. And we're glad to have you back. And we're going to talk a little bit today about surgical menopause, especially in younger women, where they're sort of thrown into menopause at an early young age. We had a listener who wrote us on Facebook about this very subject and said to us, in her words, maybe a future podcast could be something on women who are thrown into menopause because of a hysterectomy and ways they can cope with sudden onset of symptoms. Something for younger women especially would be great. And she was age 27 when she had her hysterectomy, which is really, really young.
And she had little children.
She had little children.
Which is already hard.
Yeah. So she said, after her hysterectomy, she said, my emotions were all over the place. I longed for a baby, all the while not being able to get out of bed to care for the children I already had.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. And I think it's difficult for any woman who has not yet gone through menopause, who has their uterus and their ovaries taken out. That would be the key. If you have your uterus taken out and you're not yet menopausal, but they leave the ovaries, you're still getting hormones from the ovaries. They may not function exactly the same way. They may not be as efficient in hormone secretion, but you still have them and they're still producing hormones. So that's not quite the same process and set of symptoms that you will have after surgery. The women who have the uterus and the ovaries taken out, that is surgical menopause. You have no production of hormones. So that clearly was not your story, Leanne. I mean,
I've still got all that. But I had 3 babies in 4.5 years and no help.
Yeah, yeah.
And their daddy is an overachiever and worked all the time. And I can't imagine, when I read that on Facebook, I wanted to get in a fetal position in my laundry room floor because I remember what it was like to be a young mama when you got a bunch of babies and you can't lay down. You can't, if you don't feel good, if you get the flu, it does not matter. You got to keep rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine having that happen to you.
Having all that you had and not have your hormones.
If
all
I'd
of a
had
sudden.
Those little babies and then I had that crash that I had and didn't feel good and couldn't put one foot in front of the other and all that, well, they'd have had to take my little children and somebody else would have had to raise them. I'm not kidding. But you can't do that. That's sick. And that feel bad.
Yeah. So imagine, you know, all those things happened to you at 45. You were saying one day it all just, you know, went to, you know, where in a handbasket.
Yes, it did. It went to hell in a handbasket. Can you imagine if you were a little mama with a bunch of little children running around? Does that happen often? Do a lot of women have to?
I wouldn't say that's common. I wouldn't say it's, fortunately, is not, is now, it's very possible to, or more common to have someone that age have a hysterectomy and leave their ovaries, but to have a complete hysterectomy and with the ovaries removed is usually there are a lot of complicating factors, a lot of, you know, damage to the ovaries because of endometriosis or whatever, you know. So fortunately that is the exception, but it does happen. And you know, one thing I would say is certainly if you're a candidate for hormones, if you're not having everything removed because you've got cancer, if you're a candidate for hormones, and you know you're going to have this surgery done, if you're scheduled for this surgery, it would be wise to meet with your practitioner well prior to the surgery and discuss what you're going to start immediately after the surgery. So there's not, oh, she had a surgery, let's bring her in, you know, 6 weeks later, and in the meantime, the hormones have already crashed and you're trying to bring them back up after they've crashed, and it just takes longer to fix things. So certainly having conversation with your practitioner prior to the surgery and having a plan so that you're immediately getting a balanced hormone regimen. I mean, most women will be put on an estrogen patch mm-hmm. in the hospital, which is good because it'll help with, you know, the immediate hot flashes and night sweats and, you know, the really severe, what we call vasomotor symptoms. But especially as a young woman, it's very important to have a balanced hormone regimen, not just estrogen. Most women who've had their uterus taken out end up getting just estrogen because we think we don't need to worry about the lining of the uterus, which we don't, but our progesterone and testosterone do other things for us other than, you know, address things going on with the uterus or ovaries. So so when I have a woman who is planning a hysterectomy, I do have an appointment with them prior to the surgery. We talk about what, if any, symptoms they're having right now and what to expect immediately after surgery and what we can start, because you just don't know really what their needs are going to be exactly until after, but we can certainly start a balanced regimen and then have them in for follow-up pretty quickly, you know, like 3 or 4 weeks, 2, 3, 4 weeks, and see how they're doing on that and adjust quickly, you know, adjust the dose quickly based on how they're doing on what was initiated post-surgery. So that is really, to me, an important thing to make sure the progesterone and testosterone, in addition to the estrogen, be replaced so that people can feel their best.
Mm-hmm.
So, because estrogen, as we have talked about in other episodes, helps with obviously all the vasomotor symptoms, but you know, we were saying in a previous episode that progesterone is our sleep promoting, our mood stabilizing hormone. It helps with sex drive, helps with burning fat and getting rid of extra fluid and balancing estrogen. So it's really important for women to have that hormone. And then testosterone helps us with the spatial analytical thinking and decision making and sense of self-confidence, self-assuredness, physical stamina, muscle mass, bone mass, sex drive. So, you know, a 27-year-old woman needs all that.
Yes, yeah, she does.
So that's an important thing to make sure you're getting all the hormones that you need. Some supplements that can help with some, you know, if you're having really severe symptoms is, in addition to the hormone replacement, you can do evening primrose oil. That can help with sleep. That can help with hair. Can help with hot flashes. N-acetylcysteine can also be helpful. N-acetylcysteine is a really important amino acid to protect your brain and make you think straighter. So N-acetylcysteine is something that's over-the-counter, 600 milligrams a day, can really help with brain function, which I think is a common complaint of people going into sudden menopause is that their brain just sort of doesn't function as well as pre-surgery. And for the same reason, make sure to be taking omega-3 fatty acids. So those are a few things. There are a lot of supplements you could take, but I would say those are three, if you're trying to keep it simple, those are three things that you really can help with those symptoms right after surgery.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I think that
God love her and a lot of prayer.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully you're already on our Facebook listener is already on some hormones, I'm hoping, and maybe adding those couple supplements could help as well. So without knowing specific symptoms.
I mean, mm-hmm. But and I hope she gets to go and do Zumba every once in a while and go to Target and walk around by herself.
Well, that's a very good point, Leanne. I mean, getting away a little bit and having some time
to
yourself.
Help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Getting some help. So what did you do when you needed help? You had family or?
No. I mean, I was close to Chuck's family, but they still worked.
Yeah.
So my little mom and daddy would come up every once in a while and help, but they still worked. But I remember my mom, I came home from the hospital with my baby, and she's now 20. And my mama, Lucille, you would love her. So fun. Everything is just, looks at the best of everything. My little daddy, glass half empty. Lucille, glass half full. Like you could say to him, oh, it's raining today in Knoxville. And he'd say, it's raining in Nashville and it's going to be a flood and it's going to kill all of us. Lucille would say, oh my gosh, it is really, our flowers needed it. I mean, just so happy. And all of my life, it's, oh baby, it's all right. Everything's all right. Everything's going to be fine. I get home from the hospital and I walk around the corner and I can hear her on the phone with my dad saying, Jim, I don't know what she's going to do. Because I had three babies in 4.5 years. The girls were 20 months apart. And so the oldest was 4.5, and then a 20-month-old, and then a new baby. And she said, Jim, there's no way she can take care of all these kids. It's going to take 5 men and 15 women to run this household. She said, I don't know who's going to keep the clothes. And I remember feeling this doom because she was always like, oh, no, baby, you'll be fine. That's the first time I've ever heard her be like, I don't know what you're going to do. And I felt so doomed. And I was doomed. I was pretty much doomed. And I remember every picture you look back of me at somebody's birthday party or anything, I've got on a big pair of pleated khakis. And I'm overweight and I've eaten my feelings. Thank goodness I didn't care about wine then. But I was eating, and I was heavy, and I didn't feel good, and I had a white blouse. I had because we didn't have any money. I had wore the same thing all the time. White blouse had a big stain on it, probably breast milk stains. Big khakis. My roots were down to my ears. Like, I only got my hair highlighted during my birthday, which was, something I had to go into therapy over later. But anyway, I mean, it was just awful. And I would go back. I wish I could do it again because I think I could be stronger and I would make better decisions. I would take time to poop. Mm-hmm. I know yeah. I'm obsessed with poop, but I think young moms don't take the time.
Yeah.
And I was so worried about everybody else that I didn't take time and started a long life of constipation and dreary. And then I let them sleep in the bed with me, which I would not take anything for that. But I mean, I just didn't sleep well.
Right.
I don't know. I probably didn't drink enough fluids. I was breastfeeding somebody for years, which I loved. But I did exercise, and that was one thing that I did for myself. But when I see these little mamas and they come to my show and they're like, I'm so tired, I'm going to die. I mean, I feel so bad for them, but what a wonderful blessing to have a bunch of babies. But it is so hard on a young mama.
Mm-hmm.
And
just
a lot of people
are
working.
Yeah, we're not good with self-care during that time because, you're caring for Little babies that need, care.
And then your husband's staring at you and trying to touch you. And you're like, well, everybody leave me alone. I mean, everybody wanted to touch my breast. Everybody was in my butt. Everybody just wanted to, you know. I remember Charlie going outside to play, and he would just, like, rub my breast and go, hey, can I go play over at Ethan's house? He didn't even know he was touching me. Like, everybody just had to be with me. Which now, I sleep with two beagles in the bed and my husband, and the beagles just want me. And they're touching me with all fours.
Yeah.
And they have to be touching me. Everybody wants mama. You know?
Yeah.
Kids want mommy.
Yeah.
So, for the most part, I think. But anyway, yeah, it was a difficult time. So, I can imagine if you had...
Yeah.
Any kind of illness.
Yeah.
Any kind of, really, something bad. Or like an adrenal crash or a thyroid.
Or needing surgery right after delivery. Yeah, I know. It's really hard.
Well, I had a hemorrhoid removed after my middle one. I had, oh, Lord, this horrible, terrible tear and goings on. And I remember the doctor said, Leanne, you're going to have a bottle of wine and a tube of KY after this. Like, it's awful. They were mopping up blood. It looked like The Shining. And after I birthed her, and so I go home and I'm in a sitz bath and I'm trying to, and then this big hemorrhoid thrombosed over. Is that what they call it? Yes, thrombosed. It was purple, blue. And this darling little old man that's a doctor in our town, they said, oh, he can take it off of you. And he was... And I get up on that table, and he didn't even deaden me much. I mean, didn't even let it go in. And then his five-year-old, who I think is a doctor now, who's brilliant, you could tell that by that child's head he was going to be smart. But anyway, he's looking, and he's like, get out of the way, Benjamin. And this child's looking at my butthole while he's cutting this big hemorrhoid off. And then I took codeine for that, I think, because I had all this, you know, horror going on down there. So I took codeine, and I took my babies to the park. And I remember thinking, have I been bitten by a bee? And up in my vagina area, doings, I like to call it, started, like, itching and weird sensation. And I thought, have I been bitten by a bee out here? And I went for a week, and I was allergic to codeine.
Oh, no.
But my pharmacist, I mean, like, nobody could figure it out. And my pharmacist, Amy, so smart, saw her the other night, had a show in that area where I had my little children. And I go, you know, you saved my life that time. You got me off of codeine. She goes, Lynn, I think you're allergic to codeine. But it was just like I was in war. For years, I just felt like I was in battle.
Yeah.
And I would tell their daddy, and he was trying to make a living, and I was staying home with them. So, you know, I was like, you do your thing, leave me alone, let me do my thing. But it was just a hard time in my...
Yeah.
But that's how I got started in comedy.
Yeah, and I want to find...
The horror.
I want to...
Of all that.
I want to talk about how you got out of the house... After we take a little bit of a break here,
darling.
I want to hear your story about how you got out of the house and which led to you being a comedian.
All right,
I want to hear that right after break, and we're going to take a quick break to just play a couple previews of other podcasts that are produced by Scruffy Audio Network that we think you would love to listen to.
Hey, it's Miranda with Talk Stranger, the podcast where we meet with strangers and we discuss subjects from paranormal to true crime to old story fairy tales to people who are blue that live in the mountains of Kentucky. It's weird. So look for us and listen to us wherever you can find a podcast, or don't. I mean, I don't care. Either or. It would be nice, but you don't have to.
Hey guys, this is Troy, and you are
Lee
from Why Would You Go There? And we want to tell you about the best podcast ever. Although this is going to be in the middle of other people's podcasts, so you maybe don't want to say that.
Okay.
I will also tell you the two funniest guys that you've ever heard.
So true.
Why Would You Go There? Podcasting about travel, and it's super enjoyable because we are hilarious. You have got to listen to us.
Do it. Yes.
So we're back, and we're back to hear about how you ended up, the ways you got out of the house that led you to your current career.
I know, isn't that bizarre?
I know.
Okay, so I knew in my heart when I was five I was going to do something in showbiz, but I didn't know what. Karen, because I was from the country and farming community, and, you know, little kids in a farming community or rural areas look at Hollywood and think you got to be the performer. They don't think about you could be the agent, right, the manager, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember, and my mom was fascinated by Hollywood, and she loved comedy, and so we, and still does, and so she let me watch Saturday Night Live when I was way too young, and my dad would get so mad because it would be something nasty, you know? Yeah. And Lucille would just be laughing. She loves, so we, she raised me on Carol Burnett and all that, you know.
I love it.
And so I knew something, but I went to the University of Tennessee, made some bad decisions, dated some people that I wouldn't wipe my feet on now.
Mm-hmm.
Dropped out, went back to school, met my husband. He was getting an MBA while he was stalking me. So then we, he wasn't really, he kind of was. I mean, he was so in love with me. You know how they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pursuing you. And they buy you a bunch of stuff. Hold babies in front of you because they know you want a baby. So then, you know, so he could get me. Okay, so then he bought a used mobile home business up in Bean Station, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. Beautiful area. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of nowhere.
Remote.
Remote. Very remote. Good word. Remote. And my husband's very quiet, doesn't chat, overachiever, type A, works like a dog, made straight A's in MBA school, worked three jobs, paid my rent. I mean, you know, would outwork, could outwork anybody. Yeah. Could go to Beirut and make a living off a flat rock. Okay, so so he moves me up there. And I'm like, what in the world? And he had a couple of businesses, and we tried to work together, but that just did not work for me. And him. We don't need to work together. I mean, that was a disaster. But anyway, so I got pregnant pretty quick. You know, I'm fertile. You've been in all that, you know. So praise God for that. So I had my first boy, my first child, a boy,
mm-hmm.
and I stayed home with him, nursed. And then and I had my degree, but I wanted to be with him, but I didn't like not having my own money.
Yeah.
And Chuck, being so young and having a business, I needed to do something. So mm-hmm. my friend was selling jewelry at night in Nashville. And she goes, Lena, just sell this jewelry and you can get out and you can be with girls, women, you know, and you can have fun. But you'll make a little extra money, little pocket change. So I did. And I don't care a thing in the world about jewelry. You can tell. I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and these companies, you know, they want you to wear it out in the grocery store. You end up looking like Mr. T. But I was so I start, but I loved it. I got out. I had schlepped a big jewelry thing everywhere I went. Somebody made dip, made a pan of brownies. I would get out. I was supposed to be talking about jewelry. I didn't. I talked about breastfeeding, hemorrhoids. You know, and women could relate to it.
Uh-huh.
So then I had my second baby. Well, then the company noticed that I was booking so far in advance that they asked me, and I was still up in East Tennessee, up in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains.
Uh-huh. Remote.
Very remote. No, I mean, like a Walmart near. I took a pregnancy test at the Walmart, now that I'm thinking about it, in a stall. But so I had the second baby. The company started asking me to speak at their big things about why I was getting so booked far in advance. Well, it really wasn't had anything to do with jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was me telling stories, yeah, and women thought I was funny.
Yeah.
So I had been to comedy clubs out in LA before we had babies. Oh. We had taken vacations, and I had always, and I knew I could. I just knew when I would see them, I'd think I could do that. I know I could do it. And so. It's just crazy how I had my, like, a little comedy club in people's living rooms, because there was no comedy club even Knoxville, yeah, then.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so one thing led to another, and I started doing, like, corporate events. It was just crazy. Like, somebody would go, can you do the Rotary, like, a little something-something for us? And I'd drop a baby off at preschool and go do something. And then, you know, and then I got to where – then we sold that. We moved to San Antonio. That's the first time I had a club. Drove to Austin, Texas, which was Chick Stick Night. That's the first time really people that in the business looked at me and go, oh my gosh,
She's got something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then, and those people, that's Rich Miller's brother, Dennis Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And they have another brother, Jimmy Miller, who's in LA that, well, Dennis Miller was on Saturday Night Live, you mm-hmm. know. And then Jimmy Miller has Will Ferrell, all those kind of people. They sent my CD to them. That's how I got the deal with ABC and Warner Brothers for my first sitcom. Paula Deen was going to play my mother.
Mm.
It didn't make it. The writer's strike hit. I gained weight. Chuck got me a puppy, thinking that that was going to help. He peed on everything we own. But anyway, that's how that got started. And what a blessing that I found my thing in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains with three babies. I had, by the time I turned pro, I went kind of pro. She, my baby child, who is now about to turn 21, in January, she was a year old when I started getting paid and going and doing. Oh, cool. So I was 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say to me, how did you know what you, you know, I was 32 before I got started, but I really had stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
I think if I'd have started at 20, I would have talked about my thighs, my hair.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so, you know, I just didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't have experiences to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think it was perfect timing.
Yeah.
Because the most prolific I think I've ever been is when I had a bunch of babies in pregnancy.
Yeah.
Women can talk about pregnancy and having a bunch of kids in a circle and sit and talk for hours
right.
about their pregnancy.
Yeah.
And they can talk about menopause.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, so it's interesting that your way of just having some time to yourself and making a little money
saved my life.
Saved your life and turned into a career. It's just yeah. interesting. Yeah.
But I always wanted to be a mama, and that yeah. was more important to me
right.
than anything.
Right.
But and I've been able to do it.
Right. That's
and
so
I
great.
Wish I'd have had more children now. But I say that, and I was a wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't the mama that, you know, I was trying to be the room mom and stuff, but I was like, yeah, okay, y'all run this thing and just tell me if I need to make brownies or something. Because I was never a leader. You tell me what to do, I'll come in and clean
yeah.
the toilet.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that I would go back and do differently. But for the most part, we had a ball.
Yeah.
And I've got three
yummy
kids.
You've got great kids.
Thank you.
Great kids.
Well, you've got a good one over here that I'm going to kiss.
Yeah.
In a minute.
Yes.
That angel after he has to hear all this horror.
Well, I think it's helpful for young mothers to hear your story, and it's interesting, too. So.
Well, thank you, my darling.
And
thank
so
you.
Just wanting to reach out to younger women dealing with hormonal symptoms, and we're going to do some more of that at future episodes, like dealing with things like PCOS and, you know, some other hormonal imbalance things that happen in younger women too.
Yes, and,
yeah.
and it seems like everybody's got a rough period going on. You hear people going, oh my gosh, my period's terrible.
I know.
Or I have one every 3 months.
Right, right. It's common. It's
and
very
not
common.
Every 28 days. I was like clockwork.
Yeah, so we'll hit that. Hit those problems as well. So
okay,
yeah.
good.
And before we go, I do want to. I know we talked a little bit about Stephen Brown in our last episode, but I do want to thank Stephen Brown of Glitterville, who did our artwork for our podcast, and we're grateful for him.
Oh, we love it.
And thank Forrest Winslow for our theme music.
Theme music, and Karen sang.
Yeah.
Forrest wrote it.
Yeah.
Go it's very catchy, Forrest.
If you want to hear more music from Forrest, go to iTunes and check out a song called Butterfly Girl. I think you'll like it.
Oh.
Yeah. So we will see you next time.
Okay, my darling.
And there'll be more fun, more info. And
I know. And really, if you have questions, message us, and we'll try to get to them.
Yeah. And we'll just... And maybe we can share a couple iTunes reviews before we go. There's one I was looking at here.
Well, here's one from Ginger. Every time I listen to an episode, I learn something new. It's a relief to finally understand what is happening to my 50-year-old body. Thanks to Leanne's wonderful humor and Karen's ability to explain sometimes uncomfortable topics. in very relatable terms.
Sweet. Yay. That's nice.
I know.
And just one more. Oh, geez. I wish I had someone tell me this years ago. I have to admit that I have to listen to the episodes several times because I'm laughing so loud I can't hear and have missed my exit when listening to, on my way home from work.
Well, oh, fun.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for all the feedback. We really, really appreciate it. And if you have a chance to review and rate us on iTunes, we would greatly appreciate it.
And like us on Facebook. Who knows, maybe we'll do something live on Facebook.
Yeah, that would be
great. If we can figure that out.
Yeah, we'll have to have hair and makeup people here. See you next time. Thanks for listening. Sweaty and pissed.